Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What does the CIA want with me?
Who's in anything about the CIA?
Do you do this often? Kidnapping innocent people off the street and interrogate them?
You're my first one, actually. I'm an analyst. How am I doing?
There you go. That's Jack Ryan on a Tinder date. That's a clip from Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan to, as opposed to anybody else's Jack Ryan. All seasons of season one are streaming now on Amazon Video Prime. James Dempsey joins us once again. So this is the umpteenth iteration of... Why?
John Krasinski, who people will know from The Office, is playing Jack Ryan, and he is the fifth actor to play him, because there's been Alec Baldwin, Harrison Ford, Ben Affleck, Chris Pine, very recently, and now John Krasinski. And not only is it Tom Clancy's Tom Ryan, it then immediately says created by Tom Clancy. it's a real Mark Jacobs by Mark Jacobs type thing going on. So I find this a very strange show because it came with a lot of fanfare, right? So Amazon Video Prime has existed in the US and a handful of other countries for longer than it has existed here. But it sort of missed the boat, I feel, on the kind of digital streaming and has pretty much lost, as far as I can tell, market share to Netflix.
Yeah.
Everybody is Netflix. I know a handful of people maybe that would even talk about having Amazon. And the thing about it is they launched this...
those texts roll in from listeners.
And then they launched with, you know, the Grand Tour as their big show. And I don't think that has been quite the critical hit they wanted it to be. And then they've put a lot of fanfare behind this, including at the Super Bowl last year, they bought an ad to sort of preview this. And it's been coming for a long time. It seemed I've been waiting ages and ages and ages for it to arrive. And it finally arrived on the streaming platform last Friday. And I sat down to watch it. And the first episode is a full hour. And if there's anything I hate, it's sort of an unnecessarily long episode of to-ing and fro-ing and nonsense. And the straight... So it is about Jack Ryan, the CIA analyst, who is kind of like a reluctant super sleuth. You know, he sees things and he just knows.
Mm.
And he just has that eye for...
sleuthing.
For sleuthing. Yeah. And it is really old fashioned in its in everything about it. Now it's very stylishly put together. It's set in contemporary times. Therefore the terrorists are no longer Russians, although I'm sure we'll get to Russians up to no good at some point given the current political climate, but it is religious fundamentalists from the Middle East.
Mm.
And it just is so old-fashioned in everything. I mean, it's a by-the-numbers type political thriller. The kind that I would sort of equate to, like, you know, like an NCIS. And I mean that in the most damning way that I can say those four letters.
Is it one of those, because I suppose the great difference, because there's rafts of different sorts of TV shows where people are members of the CIA or whatever. And I suppose the more interesting ones are the ones where there's moral ambiguity, where the CIA aren't the good guys.
No, they are as good, true blue American pie eating types as you could imagine.
Yeah.
The CIA come across seamlessly. There's a couple of episodes set in Paris where they go to kind of foil or attempt to foil a terrorist attack in Paris. And there they meet their French alternatives, who are the most broadly stroked, you know, French characters that they might as well be, you know, dragging on a galois and dipping their beret. And it has been much pilloried in the French media for its treatment of the French.
Hmm.
The thing about this is, right, Amazon Video Prime is another service you have to pay for, right?
Yeah.
If you want to legally watch this and you don't want a CIA analyst tracking your every online move, you have to pay. And you have to ask yourself, is the quality of programming there to pay yet? Now, in my opinion, I don't think Jack Ryan, despite it coming with bells and whistles, is enough to merit forking out whatever you should pay. Because, as I said, it's, you know, it is really the most by-the-numbers political thriller. Now, when it gets to the various terrorist attacks, there are moments that are thrilling. It is a thriller. It fulfills that remit. But everything else about it is just dull as dishwasher. Particularly good example of that, or well, a good example of bad work here, is Abbie Cornish, who is the Australian actress who people will definitely, I'd say, be able to recognise, might know her name. You would have most recently seen her in Three Billboards, where she was Woody Harrelson's Australian wife, because she is Australian.
Yeah.
And she plays Kathy Mueller, I think it is. It's Mueller with an E, Mueller, who is Jack Ryan's squeeze, right? And she's this convenient epidemiologist. So you might be able to guess how the terrorism is formed if she's in epidemiology. And she is served so poorly by this. I mean, she is the most just nothing female doctor you've ever seen. She goes around in a lab coat, she pushes a mouse around on a screen and looks at a few slides and says, "Ah, yes, Ebola." And like, that's as much as you kind of get from her. And really, it's wasted, because on the other hand, a real strength of the show is actually how it writes the wife of the main terrorist. So the main terrorist is a man named Suleiman, and his wife is Hanan, who is played by I think she's a Saudi actress named Dina. Her name is Sihabi. I'm not sure about her origins. I think she's Saudi. And she has the most interesting plot in the entire series of eight episodes, because it's about her dealing with her husband. And this isn't, well, I can't really say what she does, because it would definitely qualify as a spoiler.
Okay.
But her subplot, we'll say, is by far the most interestingly shot thing. It is very much in keeping with what's been going on in the last couple of years in terms of Middle East. And it's really fascinating. So there is groundwork for good stuff here. But it's just all so straightforward that it's not interesting.
Here's the thing then, given you have this kind of a cardboard depiction of good guys and bad guys, and you have the grand tour, and I don't know what else Amazon has to offer, but it sounds like Amazon are going for a particular market, a ladsy, "I don't want to think too much, I want to drink beer, fart and watch things blow up."
Well, they definitely have that audience, but they also started off with the critical darling and awards darling Transparent, which is anything but that.
Good point. Yeah.
Now, that is going to be interesting to see where that goes now that Jeffrey Tambor has left the building.
Yeah.
And we're not really sure where they're going to take that series next. But other shows produced by them, Mozart in the Jungle, not great. Other ones that are not coming to mind, you know, they just don't seem to have quite got the formula right yet. Now, there are interesting projects coming down the line. They have paid an absolute fortune to make Lord of the Rings, so they are going to turn Lord of the Rings into a show.
Yeah.
They also have a show coming with Sharon Horgan attached to it. She has created a show for them. It's as yet untitled, but she plays a kind of a self-help woman who hires a male gymnast to be her spokesperson.
Okay.
Solve for X.
Yes. Okay.
You know.
Yes. Thank you very much. Speaking of her, there's going to be, I mean, it's actually pleased to see there's going to be a fourth series of Catastrophe. To be honest, I didn't think there was going to be.
Yeah.
One.
So the fourth series has just wrapped production. And what Sharon Horgan has revealed is it is going to be the last season of the show, which is no bad thing. Because as she said herself, you should aim to go out while, you know, quit while you're ahead and while things are going well. And Catastrophe, I am a big fan of. It was picked up by Amazon in the US. So they broadcast Catastrophe in the US.
Right.
Or, broadcast isn't the right word. They stream in the US. And she was telling Second Captains, of which obviously she has a fraternal link to the show. And she was saying that in the readings of the scripts, she became extremely emotional. And in the filming of the final scene between her and her co-star and co-writer and co-creator, Rob Delaney, that she just completely broke down after filming the final scene. So I guess we can expect it to be poignant, which is probably in keeping with a show like that,
which
treads a very good line between black humour, regular humour and poignancy.
Yeah, indeed. But actually, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, the woman can, you know, she'll have to figure out the trick of bilocation.
She's getting
so much work.
She
at the
is.
Moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Another bit of TV news. Henry Cavill, Superman.
I could not even be less enthused about this if I wanted. Henry Cavill, I think, is just a pile of muscles that have been well assembled.
Yes.
And that's it. I think he has no charisma. I think he's...
I must say, I was actually, because I looked him up. And I was surprised to see that he was considered to be James Bond. I don't get it. Where's the wit?
Like even Mission Impossible Fallout, which has been this huge global hit and a huge critical success, I don't hear anyone talking about you know, Henry Cavill in it, because he just, I don't know. Anyway, Netflix are, they lost out, we'll say, on bidding for Lord of the Rings, so they need some kind of fantasy project to fill the soon-to-be Game of Thrones hole that is coming down the line. So they are putting their money behind The Witcher. And I wouldn't put my money behind it, because and this is no shade on the games, because it's a series of computer games, The Witcher, based on a guy named Geralt of Rivia, who is goes around and meets the princess and a sorceress and fights some monsters and so on. The warning signs here are made from a computer game, of which games have gotten increasingly better over the decades to the point that they tell cinematic stories. They are styled perfectly. There has been no good film iteration of a computer game ever. There is no good movie that is based on a computer game.
Okay.
People will text in and they are wrong.
Yes.
But...
so don't waste your 30 cents.
But, so could there be a good TV show out of a computer game? More likely, because in a TV show you can tell stories in a longer way, you can plot it differently, so on and so forth. But I still think this is a massive warning sign. It is just, they don't translate well from you having a controller in your hand to you sitting there watching. It just doesn't work, or hasn't worked.
Yeah, and won't work this time either. Right, we have to take a break. Two more shows to talk about after this.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
For Sandra and Brendan, the booming property market is a double-edged sword.
This house isn't worth 420. I know it's near town and it's on a fantastic road, but it's still a two-bedroom townhouse, and within 5 or 6 years, they've gone up double. You know, is that realistic? You know, is that saying something? Is there another crash down on the way? Who knows? Like, if we did sell this and we made 80 to 100 grand, you're going to another house that's double.
Yeah, well, basically, the profit that you would make staying here for a few years and then moving on, you would probably lose out then, you know, putting extra money into a bigger house with an extra room, say, in a back garden or whatever.
That's Our Lives and Property, Oxmantown Road. It was broadcast on Monday on RTE1, though you can, of course, catch up on the RTE player. James, what was this about?
That's a very good question. So it is, ostensibly it was presented about this documentary as looking at this road in Stony Batter in Dublin 7, Oxmantown Road, where there are roughly 200 houses. And the show was at went to great lengths and great pains to explain that over the century, these houses have, you know, changed hundreds if not thousands of times. And I was like, yeah, because that's how property works, right? I get, you know, fine. And it seemed... I'm going to be a bit critical and then I'll say nice things. So I couldn't quite grasp what was the point of this documentary. Essentially, it involved the director, John Downes, going and meeting various different type of residents who lived on the street and sort of talking about them and maybe how they acquired their house or how they managed to rent their house or what they felt about the street or how it was changing over time. And that's all fine as a kind of introductory, you know, interview quality, but I was still just waiting to get to the meat, you know, of the actual piece, and it never really got there. However, the meat that was on my plate was still very sweet and nice and lovely. There was something very charming about the documentary, despite, for me, it never really going anywhere. Because obviously, it goes without saying, there's a property crisis in the city, there's a property crisis in the country. A lot of the documentary made a point about the fact that it's very difficult to rent in Dublin. And in that, we met these lovely Oxmantown landlord or ladies, I think they were actually ladies, both of them, who were renting out their properties at below market value rates to very fortunate tenants. But we didn't meet anybody on the street who's renting out their property for more than market value, which is probably the case.
Yeah.
So instead, they packaged this rose-tinted, glass-half-full look at this amazing street on the north side. And yeah, it did look amazing. It looked like a wonderful place to live. I don't live there, so...
Well, I a little bit, my cynical... you'd be surprised. No, I can be a bit cynical sometimes. The thing, like, the Stony Batter area in general, and I'm old enough to remember when Stony Batter was known as a working class area, but it's been gentrified.
Yeah, definitely.
And not only has it been gentrified, there's a lot of media types who live in Stony Batter now, who live on Oxman Town Road. So it's through that middle class filter of, oh, look, this place is so mixed. Here's a few working class people who still live here until we price them out of the market. So actually, in an odd way, the people who are making this documentary are part of the problem.
Yeah, I also thought every second I was watching it, the value of their houses was going up.
Yes.
You know, that it was presenting this community that has this incredible community spirit. And maybe that does exist there.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
As I said, I don't live there, so I can't say for certain. But at the same time, the documentary to me was quite fragmented. It was presenting this idea of a great community, but yet none of the people on the street seemed to actually be interacting with each other. They all seemed to be going around doing their own thing, which is how cities generally run, I imagine. It was really warm and sweet and lovely, and parts of it were very interesting. There was a 92-year-old woman who had lived on the street, I think potentially in the same house, for 88 years. And she was telling her story. And she doesn't own her house. She rents. She pays rent once a week.
Okay.
That was really interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Definitely. Mm. There was a lovely story about a family. I think they're called the Stone family, whose an uncle had passed away, and they were selling his house and dividing up the proceeds towards all the nieces and nephews. And they had grown up, and I think their father had been a zookeeper and had kept, maybe it was a ringtail lemur, if I get that right, in the house. And how this monkey of sorts, Simeon, don't at me, would come and groom them when they were lying in bed and sort of work through their hair and their eyebrows and so on. That is all really interesting. What does it have to say about the property market? I don't know.
If that's what it was about.
If that's what it was about. Yeah. I mean, the title was Our Lives in Property. But again, it was so charming and nice and pleasant as a diversion. It was great. But just where was it going? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Okay. Our final show is Wanderlust. It's on Tuesdays, 9 p.m. on BBC One. Here's a clip.
I mean, I met one guy and he explained it to me. He said, if you can set up 2, 3, 4 dates a week, which you can, because that's how easy it is now. He said by Christmas, he'll have potentially slept with over 100 women.
Dark times.
Maybe it's worth thinking about taking a break from it all, if it's getting you down.
Hmm. Or, you know, you could try the old-fashioned way, starting up a conversation.
God, Dad.
No, I'm serious. You know, you see someone you like the look of in a bar, or...
Dad, the kind of people that hang around bars waiting for women to speak to them are either actual convicted sex offenders or serial killers. And that's best-case scenario.
Best case scenario, right? So the stress is on the lust. In
definitely,
Wanderlust.
Not on the wonder is this idea that a couple will look elsewhere to meet their lustful needs, if that is the right way of saying it. So this is a drama created by a British playwright named Nick Payne, based on his own play Wanderlust as well, which is about the same thing, and it follows Joy and Alan. Joy being played by Toni Collette, and Alan is a guy named Stephen McIntosh, who is a real, you know his face, but definitely not his name actor. And they're a couple, and I think it's based in Manchester, and they're living in, we'll say, wedded bliss, but not carnal bliss. And she has just recovered from a bike accident after having been knocked off her bike, and their sex life has not gotten back to where it was. And essentially, over the course of the first episode, which was on Tuesday night, they ultimately decide perhaps to keep our marriage together, we should sleep with other people. Now, this is, I think, it's supposed to be like a shocking kind of, revelatory idea that they would open their marriage. But the truth is, in 2018, I actually don't think that's quite a shocking notion anymore.
No.
Like, I'm not saying,
do you think it was designed to be shocking?
I think it's supposed to be taboo, to be honest with you, because much has been made about the amount of bonking or whatever you'll see in this episode. And the reason why I use a word like that is because, to be honest with you, you've seen much worse or much more graphic stuff on other channels.
Yeah.
But a lot has been made about the amount of sex in this show. And with Toni Collette even saying she thinks she was the first woman to have an orgasm on BBC One, which has been much disproven, if that's the right verb there.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Somebody's job was to look for orgasms on BBC One then. Okay.
So what I think is, I think a really easy practical change they perhaps could have changed to the drama to improve it would be just set it 20 years ago, set it in the 90s, where at a time where this would have been a much more racy or like completely off the wall idea. Whereas I don't think in 2018 this idea of an open marriage is so crazy that we're going to make a 6-part drama out of it. Now, I still enjoyed the episode. It was, I thought it was funny and fresh and well acted. It zipped along at a nice pace, which is what I love. And I thought there was definitely enough meat, if I can use that as an analogy, to have me back for more. Toni Collette is an underrated actress generally. Her English accent is fine. Australians are impeccable at that kind of thing. And I thought there was plenty going for it that would have me coming back for more next week. Parts of it extremely funny, including a sub. What is nice about it is how interconnected all of the characters are. Joy is a therapist. Alan, her husband, is a teacher. He's got a subplot with another teacher who has walked in on a third teacher who was enjoying time to himself in the office. Cool. And then their kids and neighbours. It all is tying nicely in together to become nicely messy. And that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, and I think probably the one big lesson from any parents listening is homeschool your children. James Dempsey, thanks a million for coming in to us. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.